Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Joseph, you are one of the world's busiest men today.
Yeah, Jim, it's exciting, and yes, we are busy. I'd probably put my wife, who's running the program, as the busiest, but we're, as we talked in the past and as we offered your listeners tickets, we're having the Catch the Energy Conference this Saturday at Mount Royal University. Our original goal was to have 550-plus attendees. Maximum capacity we thought was 600. We have 665 registered. We have a long waiting list now, so we're trying to figure out how many more people are, based on the fire regulations, we can invite. But normally there's 5% or more no-show, so we'll end up juggling it. But the energy patch is of critical interest now, and our program is not just the E&P, the exploration and production companies and the service companies, but we have one room that the TMX, Toronto, Montreal, Stock Exchange, the public company, is hosting, which is the renewable rooms. We're calling it the innovation and technology room, and we have five interesting companies presenting on, you know, the carbon capture, the issue of helium, the issue of others, you know, specialty rare earths, a company that's involved in, lowering carbon use of water in heavy oil operations. So we're very excited by the program. And this afternoon we're having a reception with the TMX for all of the sponsors and presenters. And we're going to walk them through how the day is going to go on Saturday so that everybody's prepared. And then they're going to be doing the pre-taping for the opening of the stock exchange for tomorrow morning. And TMX will be announcing that they are a major sponsor of the conference. So very exciting times, large attendance and record attendance for us. And we're already talking about maybe we better get some more space from MRU for next year.
Right. And of course, we offered to give away free tickets. No one snapped them up. I a few regrets out there, I bet now.
Well, yeah, I think, but we did get some in the end that did, they could have gotten them, if they'd responded to the first offer, then they would have definitely gotten tickets. I hope they're not sitting on the waiting list, because I think it's probably impossible for anyone from that waiting list, probably to get tickets now. But it's a nice problem to have, and we'll make sure that, we take, more capacity, for next year for the session, so that we can accommodate a much larger audience and next year. And again, the energy sector has come back. It's alive. People know, because of what's going on in Europe, about the security of supply is now a value premium. And of course, even though we do have a government in Ottawa that's not so pro-energy, the United States doesn't either. And Canada does have, some of the largest oil reserves in the world. We have very large natural gas reserves. We're finally going to see in 2025 LNG export capacity on the West Coast with the first train of LNG Canada. So, we are, despite the government hurdles, we are heading towards being a bigger player. Or being a player in the natural gas LNG business, but in the meantime, we are a very big player in movement of oil down into the U.S., the U.S. Gulf Coast, and shipments away from the Gulf Coast. So, things are very, very bright for the industry as we head the transition to renewables. But in the meantime, more oil will be used, less for transportation in the OECD countries, but more for products, you know, eyeglasses, all kinds of things that plastics are used for, you know, your computer, background, your TV, your glasses, rubber tires. Like, there's so many things that oil creates products that we use day to day that we don't really think about. And I think we're going to see more oil in the OECD countries used for products and less for transportation as we move towards more electric vehicles, in the decades to go.
Right. People decry oil sands, oil, heavy oil. What about the asphalt those electric vehicles are going to run on? I don't think they're going to run on gravel roads.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, you make a good point. That's a product that comes from the heavy oil industry, used, of course, very actively during, you know, the spring, summer, fall construction season. And, of course, roads need on an annual basis to be maintained. And so I think that's, you know, people need to realize that this isn't an industry that's facing, a death sentence. It's an industry that's transiting from being used, you know, as much as it is in transportation, you know, diesel, motor gasoline, jet fuel. Jet fuel, I think we're going to use for a long time. I don't think that's a transition with renewables. For motor side, if the, you know, the big automakers, GM, Ford, Volkswagen, Toyota, develop cars at a price point that people can afford for electric vehicles, right now it's a luxury product, but it needs to become something that everybody can afford. And we're seeing that in China and India, where there's lower price points for EVs. The question is, of course, how far is the range before you have to charge up? And hopefully technology breakthroughs occur there, where, if I can take, have a car here in Calgary, drive up to Edmonton, visit family, and drive back, and on the one charge, and then charge when I get home, you know, it would be something I'd consider. But right now, that's not the case.
Well, there is the technology to put a strip in the highway that will charge your electric car as you drive. Some countries in Europe are already installing them.
Yeah, but... the density of populations there probably makes sense. Plus the governments there, you know, you look at the cost of everything there, you know, they need to do that. You might see it in the corridors, Montreal, Toronto, you know, in the Toronto 416-905 area. Where you have less population, you know, Atlantic Canada, you know, rural Alberta, rural Saskatchewan, I think that's something, in my lifetime you probably won't see, but in higher dense areas, It is something that the politicians will have to decide if that's where they should be spending the taxpayers' money.
Now, how are natural gas and propane prices in Alberta? My little sister on the farm in Peace River said it's going to cost her $2,500 to fill her propane tank. Last year it was $1,100.
Yeah, I think we're all going to have sticker shock when we pay our winter heating bills. What's interesting, if whatever bank you're using, they're now, if you have a normal bill that you pay month to month, and then all of a sudden it the number goes higher, they send you a little warning on your, when you open up your account, when you do your online banking, and the one that pops up all the time is our city electric bill. and the numbers are just, you know, skyrocketing, double or more than it was a year ago. And then they have a little chart showing you the uptrend. And they said, if that was a stock going up, you'd be happy. But not knowing that's coming out of your back pocket, that's not so much fun.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, going into winter, when traditionally gasoline prices come down in North America, are we going to see a reduction in gasoline prices, you think?
Well, I think the issue is going to be, people talk about the 2 million barrels that OPEC Plus is talking about cutting back, but it's a quota system. They're cutting back 2 million of quota, and most countries haven't been able to, in the OPEC, world, have not been able to, like Nigeria and others, haven't been able to use their quota even before, and they won't be able to reach the quota they get even with the adjustment. The only one that's going to be able to cut back production is really Saudi Arabia. In the case of Russia, they're selling more of their liquids to India and China, you know, other countries that need it. Even they're selling to Afghanistan to the Taliban, and just recent announcement that we've seen that they announced sales to. So I think we're going to see the price of oil back off because of the economic situation. We are seeing demand destruction in the United States. The economy is slowing. I think, you know, the question of Biden saying we're not in recession, and if we were going to have one, it'd be mild. I'm not so sure I agree with that. Just to give you last week's data, the EIA data that came out on Wednesday, total demand for product in the States was down 5% from a year ago, down over a million barrels from 21.8 million to 20.76. And then motor gasoline down 10%. Again, I'll repeat that, 10% from 9.6 million to 8.7 million, down 957,000 BOEs a day. So we are seeing demand destruction. It's very clear from the EIA data. Again, and they say that people are driving less. You know, if you have lower or middle income, and you have or people on retirement with fixed revenues coming in, and your food costs are up, your shelter costs are up, your taxes are up. You don't go and have as much discretionary driving as you might have done, before the price rise. So my view still is that in Q4, we're at $86 WTI today, that we will break $70. That probably will be the cheap price during the recessionary slowdown period. And I think going into years ahead, because of underinvestment, we're probably going to see much higher prices. And that's why long-term I'm very bullish. Near-term I'm cautious. And I think from the cautious point of view, that if we get a break of, $70 WTI in November, December, that could provide us with the best buying opportunity for energy securities since March, April of 2020. So from our point of view, as we're looking at it as a potential great opportunity, we're not pessimistic for the industry. We're just saying that because of the economic situation, we're going to see lower prices. That will mean lower stock prices, and that will mean that we'll be sending out action alert buys to subscribers saying the stocks are cheap again, take advantage of them. It won't last, this window won't last long, we're going up again.
Everybody who has experienced gasoline prices in Vancouver, which were the highest in North America, $2.42 a liter, almost $10 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And next year, I think prices will be higher. So they want to switch to EVs, but now people have 10-year-old electric cars. Their batteries are dying and battery replacements are 20, 25 grand. Is that going to be a disincentive for people to switch to electric if they want lower gasoline or energy costs for moving their vehicle around?
Yeah, I think that's something that people really have to realize is that, the first thing, you have a higher purchasing price, but you don't have the operating costs of, going to the gas station and filling up for $100, every week or every 2 weeks, depending upon your the mileage and the amount of driving you do. But the big problem is after a number of years, 8 to 10 or whatever the number of years that are, depending upon the quality of the batteries and et cetera, you're going to have to write a big check, as you said, to replace them. There's companies that in China, I think NIO being one of them, where you can go in and switch your battery and you just pay a rental revenue from them, and the capital cost is lower, and then you just go in and swap batteries and you just sit in your car and they just swap the battery while you're there, and 2 minutes later you're driving off with a new battery, and you just continue to pay a service fee for it. That could be the model that works in the future, but again, that's not happening in North America. Tesla's not doing that. And, GM and Ford are just starting to bring out their cars and trucks. And most of the advertising you see is for the trucks. And there's no intention to do that. So again, you're paying way more for an electric vehicle truck versus, what you would for a gasoline or diesel. But, the capital costs again, is much higher. And then the issue of, the battery at some point. So for, you know, people who like to, you know, be lead, you know, have money and like to have the latest technological, you know, toys and vehicles, they're going to be the, you know, the ones that go and get it. But for the average individual paying 30% more or so for an EV truck versus a regular truck, that becomes an economics issue, maybe something that's beyond their ability to run to. And the key thing is, can GM, Ford, Toyota, et cetera, Volkswagen, start coming out with vehicles and price points that are equivalent to the gasoline, and that have an affordability for people who don't make the big fat, big paychecks.
Joseph, I know you like to give us the latest numbers on what's going on in the energy patch. So, what's the latest update there?
Well, as I said earlier, we're about $86 for WTI. We were up at, you know, 94, when the OPEC Plus announced the 2 million barrel a day cutback. And then as people realized that, the volumes were definitely not going to be what the OPEC had said. So we did see the price come down, as we said. I think we were down to, the high 70s. I'm just pulling up the data right now. We got down to 76.25 at the end of September. Then we had the bounce to 93.64. So the decline, from the 123 in early June to 76 was because of the recession issues. The bounce from 76 to 93.64 was based on the OPEC announcement, and now we're backing off. The low just 2 days ago was 81.30. I think we're going to break the 76.25 in the next month or two, get down below 70, and I think that's going to be the window for people to look at the sector and be willing to buy both pipeline stocks, E&P, energy service, that'll be a very attractive window for investors. And I think, you know, the tax loss selling season is going to be a big issue, because if you've got, losses in other parts, that you've taken, if you've got gains in your energy securities, which is the best performing, sector in Canada, you're going to want to take profits in that area to offset your losses, because you sure don't want to be paying, you should like to, shelter those, take advantage of those losses. So you're going to take, and harvest, gains, which the energy sector does have, and that will pull the stocks down. Usually that happens the, third week of November to the second week of December. And that would be when we'll be sending out, action alert buys to people saying, we have bargains in these stocks. The fundamentals of the companies are great. The upside is great. Many of them pay decent dividends, and many of them also have NCIBs, normal course issuer bids. So, heading into 2023, these stocks should do well. My guess is that we'll see, over $100 consistent prices for WTI in 2024 and thereon. 2023 is really going to be up to the economic data. If the recession is mild, then prices will do better. If the recession is severe, then it'll take the first half of 2023 with low prices, and then some recovery in the second half of 2023. Historically, markets and the energy markets discount, bad news. So if you look at, when we had Lehman failure in 08, the market plunged from the summer of 08 to the first quarter of 09. So over 9 months, they discounted a severe global financial crisis. So we peaked in January on the Dow. So could we bottom in December? Could we bottom in March, April of 2023? That to me is kind of the window between December and March of April of next year, when we get to the bottom, and the whole market probably will be repriced at attractive levels. Technologies, the Nasdaq's been the worst performing index of them all, over 50% decline from the high of November of 2021. We're over 20% declines in the TSX and in the Dow. The S&P's a bit more. So I think they're going to see, great buying opportunity, and people should be thinking, hopefully they raised cash when the market was effervescent, and they're now sitting with cash reserves to be buyers, and they should be starting to get their shopping list ready, not only for the energy sector, but the technology sector, financials, et cetera. When we get this low-risk entry point, which I see happening in the months ahead.
Joseph, good luck with the conference, and shake a lot of hands for, I'm sure, some family friends of mine there.
Look forward to it. Have them come up and see me if they're there, and say hello on behalf of Jim.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from my hometown of Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.